weird? Isn't it weird? We were just talking
about... Knock, knock.
Paisley Penny Arcade. Welcome to Moe's Paisley 3-4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Moe, and this is the Paisley Penny. Don't mind me. Here we are. How you doing? It's Wednesday, the 29th of January, 2025. In the year 25, oh, that's a different song. Yeah, 2025, that's right. 2025, here we are, and this is it. This is Wednesday, January 29th, and today is the Lunar New Year, the Tet, as it's known in some parts of the world. It is the Lunar New Year, and Happy New Year to those of you who celebrate it thusly. Also known as the Chinese New Year, but it's the Asian New Year. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. I had the wonderful privilege of celebrating the Chinese New Year, as it was known back then, Gong Hei Fa Choi. And firecrackers all around you, on you, at you, in you, I suppose. In Chinatown in San Francisco, 1 year, 1973, to be exact. And oh, what a time that was. Whew. I'll tell the story. Not everyone's heard it. I've told it before. It's actually on my podcast, which is called Out of Moe's Mind, which is an independent podcast, which is stories that I have told and put them indelibly in some form, which will, once I stop paying for the podcast, which is rather inexpensive, actually, Mark's got one. I should do more of them. I should take some of these shows, chop them up into tastier bites, and put them on there. You know? I mean, really, why not? I don't do much of anything. I just sit around and, you know, stare at the walls and go, God, these walls are bare. I need to put stuff up there. I've designed an entire strange deck known as a I'll remember it. Well, it's a psychedelic deck. It's, but it's got another name, too. I'll think of it. But it's a psychedelic deck, and boy, is it psychedelic. It's like, wow, did I really do all that work? Yep, I did. And I should get some of those cards printed up. Or I could do it myself with photographic paper. And put them up on my walls, except I'd be all day going, oh, my eyes. So today is the new year, Lunar New Year. It's the new moon. Happy new moon. And it is the year of the snake. The snake. The serpent. And it's a wood snake. A wooden snake. Don't take any wooden snakes. Wooden nickels. Did you know that wooden nickels actually were a thing at one time? Yes, they were. You can look it up, because I'm not going to talk about that. The wooden snake. Fascinating idea. There are five elements in the Chinese system. In the Asian system, I guess I should say, since it's much more ubiquitous than just in China. And those five elements are fire, water, earth, metal, and wood. Yeah. And they are equal to the I Ching and Feng Shui. And so it's fascinating stuff. And far be it from me to discuss it. All you have to do is dig into your local web, and you'll find out all you need to do about it. If you are a snake in the Chinese circle of animals, then you know the dragon is next, and you know, so on and so forth. And you know the traits and when you were born. I believe it was 63 that the snake was born, you know, right around there, something like that. Then, yeah, I don't keep up with that. I used to. But I go through cycles just the way they do. And it's fascinating stuff, really is. But I don't keep up with the more modern aspects of it. But it coincides with, I believe, Jen, which is the eldest son, and is in the east on the Bagua, the later arrangement of heaven, which is also in the former arrangement. As well, yeah, the former arrangement. Well, maybe I better check that. I'm not going to check it now. I've got a big old book right there. Big old book. I'm not going to pull it down. It's a massive tome. And I'm still having some back problems. But better, though. Much better. Thank you for asking. I don't even know if I've even mentioned it before. But so, yeah. I mean, you know, snakes have gotten a bad rap. When in actuality, we'd be up to our eyeballs in rodents if it weren't for them. There are some, however, that are a little bit ominous. And those are some very poisonous to human beings. And, of course, in the story of the Garden of Eden, there was the famous serpent that Lucifer took the shape of, the form of, the masquerade of. And, you know, in Paradise Lost, I don't know if you've ever read Paradise Lost or not. I was reading it in my first year in college. And the professor I had, Dick Maxwell, what a great guy he was. Great guy to teach that class. He said to us, read it out loud. Take it home and read it out loud. And so I'd go into my room, you know, I was living with my parents. I was but a tot of 17, or no, 18, and I'd read it out loud, and they say, do you have to do that? I'd say, I do. That's what he said to do, and it's beautifully read out loud. I mean, it's beautiful when it's read out loud, and beautifully read out loud by me, I will say, and it was just incredible. What an incredible thing to do. And when Lucifer first comes into the garden in the garb of the snake, he's erect. And I don't mean in the common term, but he's not slithering on his belly. He's a serpent, but he's like 12 feet tall. And he comes in because he's tall. He's not slithering. He's upright. And he comes in and he's gorgeous, you know. He's beautiful. And it's like, wow, what a sight. That must have been to behold. You know, that's how John Milton wrote it. In the first place. You know, Milton went blind writing that, and he had to dictate it to his wife, I believe, his wife. Who knows? Someone knows. I don't, for sure. Interestingly enough, Herman Melville ended up dictating Moby Dick to his sister. So, you know, maybe that's the key to me finishing all my works that I've started, is to find someone to dictate it to. I know there's AI to dictate to. Dictation. Interesting idea. Yep, interesting idea. There's so many great things to do with time. And I don't use mine for great things, but I do like time. Time is fascinating stuff, isn't it? So, Let's talk about wood for just a second in the I Ching. Wood, there are two signs that are ruled by wood, two hexagrams. One is Sun, and that is the eldest daughter, and Chen, who is the eldest son. And Sun, the penetrating wind. Sun, the eldest daughter, she's really something. She's wood, and green is associated with her, just as it is the eldest son. And growth is associated with both of them. Blue is associated with the eldest son. That's a color. So you think about growth, you think about movement, you think about he's thunder. That's one thing you associate with him. With her, you associate, a bamboo forest, I think about. When I think about both of them together, I think about a bamboo forest with wind rushing through it and thunder in the distance. I love that. That's what I think about. I think about responsibility. I think about, I just saw a snake in my mind's eye. Wow, it was interesting. I'm seeing a red and black snake, which generally is considered to be pretty dangerous. So I've got my eyes closed. I do that. Close my eyes. Do it. Do it. You can do it too. Just close your eyes and see what you see. And I see this red and black serpent, and it is definitely dangerous. So I'm seeing something there, and I'm seeing it kind of head on. So I'm saying, okay, well, I want to get to the side of it here. Because you see, in divination, we say, I'd rather be a watcher than having it be a message for me, especially when it's something like this, but in the year of the snake. Well, black is the color of the earth. Oh, yes, of course it is. And red. And red is also considered to be an earthy color as well. So we say, okay, well, don't get too upset, you see. But this is how divination works. You close your eyes and you think. And you think. Red is also a color of it's a color of lots of things, depending upon the red. Well, the red I'm looking at is the color of the I Ching itself, the red earth. That makes perfect sense. But in the I Ching and in Chinese horoscopy, the serpent is considered to be an intelligent, sensitive being, but it could also be dangerous because we understand serpents. They're very fast moving. I don't know if you've ever seen a snake when it wants to move quickly. Boy, they can really, really move. I think perhaps the first snake I ever saw in person was in Michigan when I was a little kid. I was probably four, maybe three or four. And it was, what'd they call that thing? A blue racer. And we'd gone up to somewhere with a group of people, and it was in a cabin. And this thing, I just saw this zip. And they caught this thing, and I don't know what they did with it. I think they let it go. It was huge. I mean, it was probably 6-7 feet long. I don't know how they caught it. Held it up, and there it was. And in the sunlight, it was a dark blue, and it was beautiful. And I was terrified. Not terrified. I was fascinated, but I wanted to keep my distance from it. I've always had a healthy respect for serpents, for snakes, and I just don't necessarily like them, you know. Not that fond of them, and mostly out of ignorance. I remember one day, my wife and I were getting in the car. We had an errand to run, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw scales. This was in our garage. And I knew there was a snake all curled up next to the car. And I just went ahead and got in the car. I didn't say a word. Didn't say, great honk, there's a snake next to the car. Because that would have been improper. Got in the car, turned it on, pulled out of the garage, stopped the car. My wife said, why are you stopping the car? And I said, because there's a snake. and it's a big one next to the car. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, there's a snake next to the car. So I got out of the car and I said, okay, I need to see if this is what I think it is. And I went and looked at it and I could not make out what it was. It was real light color and couldn't make out the shape of the head too well. And I learned when I was a kid, a young kid, I mean, well, now I was about in my early teens, there was a herpetologist from the university who lived not far from where I lived, probably about a mile, maybe not even a mile, three quarters, half a mile, something like that. And he was a herpetologist at the college, like I said, and he had a cobra get loosed from his house. And that cobra was a deadly, deadly serpent. And so he had to put out an alert to the police, and they had to come down and, you know, comb through everything, and they found it frozen because it was in, the early fall or late fall or something like that. And he was, of course, extremely upset because it was rare, and we were all thrilled to death, frankly, that this, but it had gotten loose, and it was a smallish thing. But it could have killed anyone who found it if they had found it improperly, like with their shin or their arm. So I knew, and I knew, I've heard of people who keep illegal serpents and deadly ones at that. So I called the game and fish people, you know, here, whatever they're called, animal control, and they came out, and my wife was making fun of me because I donned gloves, heavy work gloves, and, you know, and I was not going to get near it. And the person showed up with the regalia and the stick and all that, because I was not about to do anything. And I got fairly close to it, and it struck at me. And this thing was about 6 feet, 7 feet long. And I had no idea what it was. It turned out to be an albino bull snake in the wild. And it was blind because it was going through its shedding, molting. And so it had scales on its eyes. And he said, oh, no, you did the right thing. He said, people have illegal snakes all the time, and we get called out all the time for really dangerous snakes. So I went, to my wife, you know. I did not do that because I can still talk. I would have had my tongue cut out in the middle of the night if I had done that. But so I'm just really wary. I've always been wary. I went to the National Museum in Washington, D.C., saw the pandas. But what really got me was the king cobra. They had a 12-foot-long king cobra. And this thing just sat there and stares. Because it doesn't have any eyelids. That's another thing about one of the traits of serpent people, snake people, in the mythology of Chinese, is that they're very attentive. They watch. They watch and they perceive. And so that's one of the things about them, is they watch and they perceive. And they get things. They understand things that other people don't get. So you snakes, this is kind of a year for you. This is a year that you can make use of a lot of different abilities if you are willing to do so. So don't not do it. That's a double negative. So you figure out what that means, because I'm too tired. So. But that's kind of a cool thing. Now, when you look at it on a national scene, if you look around what's going on here lately, bunch of snakes kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Bunch of snakes with earth energy, worried about the physical, worried about what's going on physically, rather than spiritually, and I think we're seeing that on a certain level. That there are people who are, they can do subterfuge. They can sneak in through little cracks and holes in the wall and that sort of thing. That's nothing against you snake people, because you're pretty cool people. I've known quite a few in my life. And they're very resourceful, very intelligent. Like I said, they can see things that other people can't because they never blink. You know, snakes don't have eyelids. Isn't that kind of cool? So sometimes you get the feeling they're kind of staring at you. Well, yeah, why not? You know, sometimes there's something not to lose sight of. And sometimes if there's something cool going on, why would you turn away from it? You know, why would you turn away from something worth looking at? I've noticed a lot of snakes can get into gambling, just like dragons. Dragons like the gambling as well, you know. Now, me, I'm a horse, you know, like Mr. Ed. Hey there, Wilbur, you know, that sort of thing. But there's quite an interesting, I studied it for a while, and I went through it, and I kind of said, I think I'm kind of done with that. There's a lot of luck involved with it, but the luck, of course, is based upon numbers. There's pillars, and I had fun. I had fun. But if you're interested, just put it into the web gadget you have, the browser, Chinese astrology, put in Year of the Snake, and boy, will you be inundated with information. More than you need, you can get your daily horoscope based on it, and you may find that you like it, and you may find that it just doesn't talk to you, you know. But whatever you find, have fun. You know, I have a saying, if it ain't fun, why are you doing it, right? And I actually do believe that. There are some things that you just can't help doing that aren't fun. And there are a lot of things like that. A lot of things like that. But for the most part, if it ain't fun, you don't necessarily have to do it. Once you graduate from high school, there's not a whole lot that we really have to do that we have to do. Unless it's the draft or, you know, court or prison or something like that. And some people do get, you know, in a situation where that is part of the issue. But for the most part, job, oh my God, yeah, am I forgetting that? You know, I've been lucky enough that I've been able to do this, not this actually, but lots of things surrounding this, like, you know, doing readings and working with people. And I love working with people, but I've been able to do that for, you know, the majority of my life. So, blah, 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 blah. So I'll tell you my San Francisco Lunar New Year story. So, and I just think it was such a great story, and it taught me a lot. I don't know what it really taught me, but it was funny. So my dad in 1972 accepted, in the summer, late summer of 72, accepted an offer to go to Stanford University for a sabbatical from Colorado State. Or not from Colorado State, or to leave Colorado State to go to Stanford University for a sabbatical. And he'd get to go to Berkeley once a week. And I was able to go to Foothills Junior College in Los Altos Hills to go to college for my first year of college, which was, by the way, some of the best college I had in my college career. And I went to Colorado State, and I went to Los Altos Hills, and I went to Louisiana State. And trust me, it was really good college in California at a junior college. The campus was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. That's how cool. And they made out little redwood buildings that we just sat in that were really amazing. Really, really nice. Nice, nice, nice. And the hills, you know, just, oh, gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. But good. You know, I went to school mostly with ex-hippies and some hippies, more or less, and ex-Vietnam vets who were actually still Vietnam vets. There's no such thing. They were just Vietnam vets. I don't know why I said that. And a lot of really strange people, of which I was one. So, 1972. So off we go to California for a year. And I had imagined far out, I get to be with, you know, San Francisco, the hippie guy, you know, because I was a hippie in heart. And after the fact, of course, only to find out that San Francisco despised hippies because they had kind of ruined the city. There were a lot of hippies there, but they weren't as hippie-ish as they had been because the city was burned out on the whole thing. But here I come with my hair growing and my beard growing because I just graduated from high school. So my hair is getting longer and longer and longer, and my beard is coming in. I was only 17, so it was kind of like peach fuzz. I actually was pretty, it was coming in. It was blotchy. And February comes around, and my mom and dad, you know, they used to go to Chinatown every weekend because my mom had found Nirvana, you know, in Chinatown because she loved to haggle, and it was Chinatown was where you went to haggle because you could haggle with the people there. They loved it, and she found that you could get certain things that you just can't get anywhere else. For example, there's a dish, an Egyptian dish called mulcheya. Now, mulcheya is this green plant, and it's actually the watermallow plant, the marsh. It's a marshmallow. It is the marshmallow plant. And the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, made marshmallows out of mulcheya. And what they did is they took the sap of this thing and they added honey, and then they baked it, and it was a form of marshmallows. But they can also make a soup out of it. And the soup, if you've never heard of mulcheya, the soup, which they usually cook it with like rabbit or lamb or and it has the viscosity of, will you please pardon me here, of snot. So you have this soup that has the viscosity of snot. And as a kid, I absolutely, it was like that, you know. Here, we're going to have mulcheya. And I'd say, can I have a peanut butter sandwich? No, you cannot have a peanut butter sandwich. You have to eat what we're going to eat, you know, that sort of thing. And it was like, oh, you know. And now I would love to sit down and have a bowl of mulcheya. You know, I would really, because it has a really good flavor. It's the leaves of the marshmallow plant. Chopped up and cooked down, and so it's this viscous, you know, thinking about it, but you know, when you actually get down to it, an oxtail, they would sometimes cook it with oxtail. It's just not, the Egyptians ate some stuff that I just wasn't, as a kid, you know, you didn't see Wally and the Beaver sit down to, you know, mulcheya. You just didn't see it, you know. So one day, we're down there, and I hear my mom go, Yahya, Yahya, which is my dad's name was Yahya, which means John, actually. She says, look, 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 come here, it's mulcheya. And I just, my heart just sank. I just thought, oh, no. And sure enough, it was mulcheya, which the Chinese called suluyu. And that was, you know, it was the marshmallow plant. And they fell in love with my mom after that. It was like they learned her name. Her name was Ibtisam, which meant smile, you know, because she had a beautiful smile from the time she was very, very young. And so here was this incredible thing. She loved Chinatown. So every week it was Chinatown, 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 which was a good, you know, probably a 30-40 minute drive from Palo Alto, where we lived. This was before Palo Alto was the Palo Alto. And driving on the Bayshore Freeway from Palo Alto, I loved, because it was 90 miles an hour, bumper to bumper. They're crazy. I don't know if they still drive that way. I mean, this was 50 years ago. 52. And it was an incredible drive. I mean, the beginning, it was white knuckle all the way because there was no space between cars. It's 90 miles an hour, bumper to bumper. And I was used to, you know, the 2-second rule, 2 seconds between each vehicle. Not there. If you did that there, you were going to be a goner. But no, sir. I mean, it was just, was that fantastic. I just got so used to it. It was a wonderful way to drive. Dangerous as could be, but just a wonderful feeling of exhilaration. You felt like you were Superman flying through the cosmos and risking everyone's life. But that's how everyone drove, and you could not drive safely and get to where you were going without endangering everybody. So I had actually, you know, I finally a few times said, I'm not going, I have a paper due, or I just didn't feel like, you know, being with the screaming kids and all that stuff, to my siblings. And my siblings, my brothers, were demons at that point. And they're better now, not a whole lot, but more or less, you know. I love them. So off we went, and it turned out, to unbeknownst to us, it was the Lunar New Year in Chinatown in San Francisco. And we only found this out when we got out of the car and were immediately accosted by firecrackers everywhere and people throwing them at you. And I'm thinking, oh, what the is this? I said, don't do that. They said, oh, it's good luck because we're throwing these firecrackers at you to keep the demons away. And I'm thinking, you know what? I don't like this. I don't like having firecrackers thrown at me. That's something I've never really liked. Maybe I was a dog in a former life. Certainly that would explain a lot, actually. But anyway, so there, we were dealing with this, you know, pow, 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 pow. We got there about 2 in the afternoon, I imagined, you know. And so we did the normal, all the stuff you do that we did every time we went there, and that's the shopping and going from this to this, and my mother trying to get a $5,000 tapestry for like $200, you know. God bless her. My God, she was something. And of course, not getting it and being irritated and laughing and, you know, the whole thing, just the whole thing. And we had lunch and we had some hole in the wall where they would literally throw the silverware on your table because it was a different culture. That's just how they did it. And my mother would be offended and this and that. There'd be a hair in the food. And you'd say, there's a hair in the food. They come over and they take it out and they say, thanks, it's gone now. And then you'd eat it. That's just because that's how it was, you know. So that was just... God, that was a great time. That was a great year. I think it was maybe the happiest year my mom ever had in this country, for sure. What a year that was. It was remarkable. I learned a lot. Boy, did I learn a lot. Boy, did I learn a lot. Huh. Yeah. And I expected California to be open to metaphysics. Boy, did I ever. You know, you expect something like that. And I was blown away. It was not. It was not. It was really kind of shut down and hush-hush. I met people who were into it to some extent, but for the most part, it was not. They didn't talk about it. I'd say, yeah, I'm really into Tarot, and I had a Tarot deck on me, and people didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to get their cards read. I did a little palmistry here and there, but for the most part, people were just not into it. And I thought, what happened here? What happened here? What happened was the summer of love. What happened was years of, I mean, God, it wasn't that long. It was 6 years later. It was this incredible ripping apart of a culture and the toll that it took on the people who were there, who lived there, you know, and I, my hair was getting longer and frizzier and, you know, that sort of thing. And especially in Chinatown, where I would walk around with my long hair, and if I wasn't with my parents, if I strayed away, man, they watched me like hawks, because there were probably a lot of shoplifting and so on. Anyway, so here we are on this Chinese New Year, and it was really, everything was colorful. People were really up and happy, and so they said, oh, you got to wait for the lion dance, and you got to wait for the dragon. Got to wait for the dragon. And so My parents said, yes, okay, now I've got like a headache from the firecrackers, and they're everywhere. And not just a strand, but like hundreds of strands being thrown at you. And I thought, do we have this much gunpowder in the world? So finally, nighttime comes. And it was the parade was insane. And I mean really, really something. It was truly remarkable. Loud and gongs and bang, 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 you know, and all the whole thing. And it was fantastic. We had a good place to watch from, right on the side of the street on Grant Street, you know, which was, I think that's what it was, the main drag. And all the shops and everything. And people are out watching and a lot of fun. And they had this, and, you know, the lion dancers, and it was, which was really beautiful, beautifully done, incredible acrobats. And then comes the dragon. And just magnificent. These guys were truly incredible guys and gals, I don't know. And at the front, there is a guy. And the guy he's holding this thing, a stick, and on the end of it is a big ball. And it's colored, you know, whitish color, and it's big pearl, supposedly. And this is the pearl of wisdom. And that's where that comes from. We say the pearl of wisdom. And what he would do is he would run from one side of the street to the other, and the dragon would follow in a serpentine manner. And he would shove that pearl in someone's face, and the dragon would yell something out. You know, the guy in the front of the dragon was, I guess he was the chosen, wisdom guy. And he would yell something out. You know, that the person would listen to. And this was his prophecy of the year. And so, and people would laugh. He'd say something funny, or people would go, ooh. And this was coming up the street, you know, coming up. And so we're standing there, and I was standing right at the curb. And my mom, and she had, I think, now, my dad was holding my baby sister, who was like a year old at the time. My God, she was not even a year old. She was just a few months old. I mean, she was very, very, very young. Oh, no, she was a year old, a year and a couple months. And then my kid brother and my younger brother than that. And they're standing there, so just young and dumb and evil. I'm kidding. Very young. And we're standing there as a family. And this dragon's coming up the street, and ding, 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 you know, with the gongs and the horns. And it's just wonderful. And suddenly, this guy with the pearl of wisdom stops right in front of me and shoves the pearl right in my face. And I can see the dragon's mouth open, and I can see the guy standing there, and he is just drenched in sweat. And he looks right at me, and he screams out, "Yo, hippie, get haircut!" And people around just start laughing. And my mom, who had been saying to me every day, at least three times a day, four times, maybe 100 times, "Get a haircut, get a haircut, get a haircut." She just starts laughing so hard that I thought she was going to fall over. And then off the dragon goes, ding, 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 up the street, you know. And she's laughing so hard that she has to go back to a building and lean against it. Tears are streaming down her face. And all she can say is, "Hippie, get haircut, ha, 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 ha. Hippie, get haircut, ha, 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 ha." And I'm not amused. I'm thinking, how did he do that? How did he do that? How did she figure out what happened here? And people around us are they're screaming, they're laughing so hard because they figured it out right away that we're related, you know, and dad is laughing, and my brothers are just in hysterics. And I'm thinking, is someone going to catch my little sister when she falls out of my dad's arms? Because now he's laughing, and I'm the only one not laughing. I'm going, ha ha, very funny. And my mom is just almost like, you know, a sack of wet flour. She is just, her face is, she had a very fair complexion, and she is just doubled over, and she can't breathe. She's gasping for air, and literally as red as a tomato, and gasping and laughing, and, you know, just, and I thought, in that moment, I looked, and I just loved her so much, and I thought, good for you. You got a laugh out of it. It's good for you, you know? And she finally, she stood up and pointed at me and said, "Hippie, you're going to get a haircut before the end of the year. The dragon said so. That's his prediction." And she started laughing all over again. And I said, "You know what, Mom? That's not true. I'm not getting a haircut by the end of the year, but, you know, I want to know something. So here's the deal." So the year, the sabbatical ended in September. We moved back to Colorado, and it was decided we would go to Egypt to visit. My dad hadn't been to Egypt in over 20 years, hadn't seen his mom. His dad had died only a couple of years after they left Egypt to go to England so he could get his MRCVS. And he looked at me and said, "If you go to Egypt with that hair and that beard, you're not going to make it back to this country. They'll throw you in prison or you'll die on the streets." And I said, "Oh, come on." He said, "No, you have to go get a haircut." And I thought, oh my God. And my mom said, "Hippie, you get haircut." And I thought, that dragon was right. He was absolutely right. So there you are. There you are. The pearl of wisdom was correct. There it is. Now, that was that the last haircut? It was the last haircut I had until I was, let's see, I was 17. I turned 18 in California, and I hadn't turned 18 yet. So I was 18. So I turned 18. And that was the last haircut I had until I was 50-something. And then I cut my hair. I gave my ponytail to my kids, half to each of them. And I haven't had a haircut now in, I bet it's been about 6-7 months. I just, let me tell you something. I don't like haircuts. I've never liked haircuts, not from when I was a little tiny kid. I remember being about 4 years old and just thinking, you know, they put you in this barber chair. For you who've never had the male haircut experience, put you in a barber chair and they put a piece of toilet paper around your neck. But it's not toilet paper, it's harder than that. And it itches. The minute you get in the chair, you begin to itch all over. You know, I don't know what it is, whether it's itching powder. Do you know what itching powder is? They put tarantula hairs in it. That's what itching powder is. So I don't know if they put itching powder in the tarantula hairs in the chair or if it's just something, but I always hated barbershops. My dad used to get haircuts, and I'd say, "Why do you do this?" He said, "Because that's what society." I said, "Would you get haircuts if you didn't have to?" He said, "Well, yes." He said, "I'm a civilized man." And I thought, why are you civilized, you know? I used to watch him shave. My dad had a heavy beard. I mean, he had a heavy, heavy beard. If he wanted to remain clean shaven into the evening, he had to shave at 5 o'clock when he got home. And I'm thinking, oh, this is horrible. He had to shave 3 times in the morning to be clean shaven to go to work. And he had a big cleft in his chin. He had to pull it apart and, you know, scrape, 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 scrape. It was horrible. Horrible. And I'd watch him and he'd cut himself and he'd have to put toilet paper on there and it would bleed. And I'd think, "Man, I am not doing that." He said, "Oh, you'll change your mind." And I thought, darn tootin', I'm not changing my mind. I'm having a beard. I told him when I was like three or four, I said, "I'm growing a beard. I'm growing a beard like Santa Claus. I'm growing a beard like Sebastian Cabot, you know? I'm growing a beard." And I don't think he was too surprised when at the age of 15, I said, "I'm growing a beard," you know, when hippies were, you know, coming out. And by the age of 17, when they gave me a Norelco shaver. I said, Dad, you can use this because I'm growing a beard. You know, he said, okay, it's a good one. Thanks. You know, and, you know, I grew a beard. And so I shaved it off once. Shaved it off once because I couldn't remember if I had a cleft in my chin or not. And I do have one. It's not a very big one. It's not like my dad's, but I do have a bit of a cleft. And you know, my kids had never seen me without my beard. Never. They'd never seen me without my beard. So, decided, I did it badly. I actually hurt myself cutting my beard off. I just took scissors and whacked as much of it off as I could. I have to watch how I say that. But anyway, so then I took, soap and, with the brush and, wiped up all over my face. And then I took the razor and just, like a Three Stooges thing, just roughly did it. And my face just blew up like a sardine. Well, that's not an idiom, but it blew up. I looked like a big old grape. And, so I didn't even in it, it hurt. But it had no hair on it. So, it was really, I hated the way I looked. I think everyone hated the way I looked. I went to the bank, and my wife was with me, and the people at the bank thought she was having an affair because we were holding hands. And they thought that she was with another man, and I thought that was hysterical. And I left my mustache on because I was so horrified at not having a chin, or a, beard on my chin or whatever. It was terrible. It was horrible because my beard is more than just hair. It's kind of a friend, I know that sounds crazy to those of you who don't have a beard or have never had a beard. A beard was, during that time, the freak times, it became a part of your identity. It was an important aspect of who you were because it was part of the culture. So when you grew a beard or a mustache or, mutton chops or whatever you had, I always went for the full beard, let's do this. It was a very important aspect of who you are. It still is. I happen to like my beard. I think I have a great beard. And wow. Not to have one for one day. I didn't have one for one day. And so decided, the kids said, should we get together? I said, sure, let's get together. And they walked right by me and didn't recognize me. Now, who did recognize me instantly was my 4-year-old granddaughter. She said, why did we walk right by Papa? And I thought, wow, now that was far out. So you can fool some of the people some of the time, but not all. So that's that. That's that. Hair. How weird is hair, man? How weird is hair? But when it's an identity thing, talk about a crisis. It took me a full month to have that hair back the way I liked it. As a beard that I could say, whew, where have you been, man? Where have you been? Isn't that strange? That was a time when... that was a time. I remember when I first grew my beard, started growing it, and I heard someone say, you with a beard. And I was like, oh, man, finally. Oh, you with a beard. See, it was a strange time, the 60s, the 70s. I was young and just aching to be a part of something because I never felt like I was a part of anything. So it's interesting what we glom on to. You, hippie, you get haircut. But I did get a haircut. I don't talk about this too often, but when I was in California in this apartment that we lived in, we were the first people to live in that apartment because it was new staff and faculty apartments on Stanford campus. And we were the first people to get to live in it. And I saw it 20 years later. It didn't look as great. But then it had been lived in quite a lot. And I got a vision, what the hell, from what I looked to me like the god Anubis. And he said to me, before the year is through, you will visit the homeland, and I took that to mean Egypt. And I thought, oh, a pshaw, but he was right. Before the year was through, we went. And I thought, man, what is going on here? I told my psychology teacher, who was a guy from Baton Rouge, had gotten his degree at LSU. I thought, man, the world is so amazing how it knits itself together. You know, one of my best friends when I was growing up was from Baton Rouge. And I thought, wow, how weird is this? It took me years later to realize that he was, I mean, I knew he was from there, but how interesting that I would end up going there and graduating there from college, you know. Things in the world knit together neatly. Neatly. Yeah, it was Jack. Jack died when we were 19. Damn near gutted me. He did gut me. It just, you know, it blew my mind, as we say. I mean, it really destroyed me because he was such a great guy. And it just pulled the bottom out from underneath me at 19 for Jack to die. And just gone. Poof. Done. And you just say, well, then what? Because he was smart. And he was sensitive. And he was a good friend. I could tell him anything. And I mean anything. I mean, he was a straight arrow. He didn't do anything. You know, he wasn't drinking. He drank a little bit, wine, you know, classy stuff. Yeah, he didn't do what I did. He wasn't drinking MD-2020 or Ripple. He wasn't dropping acid. He wasn't smoking dope. And I told him everything I did because I had known Jack since I was a little kid. And we grew up together. And he knew my heart and he knew my soul. And I could tell Jack anything. And then, poof, he was gone. And boy, did I miss him. And boy, do I miss him. And boy, I would love to have known him as an adult. Because he was a cool guy. He was a sweetheart. You know. He was like the anti-Mo. You know, he just was not the opposite of me per se, but... and he never judged me. He never, you know, Mo, you shouldn't be doing that. I had a friend who I told once, yeah, I, you know, smoked pot. Started smoking, and I smoked. And he pulled the car over to the side of the road and told me what an idiot I was. And I thought, well, I expected a little less judgment from you, man. And that guy turned out to be a, well, that's just a different story. But that was hard. That was hard. And I ended up kind of going off the deep end for a while. I did. Huh. Yeah. And here I am, 70. And Jack is still 19. He came to me. Many years ago, we talked for a while. See, and yet I still wonder if there is such a thing as persistence of life. On the other side, I don't know. I don't know that I've been good enough. I've tried. Now imagine this, as we're speaking, my brother yesterday fell in the kitchen and severed the head of his femur from the bone. I hope he's okay. I'm worried about him. I mean, you know, that's a pretty serious thing. And I guess nowadays they can reattach it pretty well. But you worry about things like that because I love him. Love is what it's all about. You love people? God knows I love people. I have loved people all my life. And there have been so many times when that love has not been returned. Unrequited? Nah, maybe. But I would rather love someone and not have them love me back.
than not love them. And I mean that. I would rather love someone and be treated badly by them than not to love them. And I mean that because I believe in love. I believe in love. I believe that love is the most important part of being who we are. And I've been in relationships where I have loved much more than I have been loved back. Much more. And I've been in relationships where someone could write me a note and tell me how much they love me, but not tell me to my face. And that hurts. But you know what? I'd rather have it that way than not at all. I hope you believe in love. And I hope you persist in it. And these are strange, ridiculous times. But keep the faith, baby. All right? We'll talk on and off about such things. But remember, if the Pearl of Wisdom and the Dragon can predict that hippie get haircut, then anything can happen. And good is still around. All right? And when I say that I love you, I know you can feel it. Feel it, because it's the truth. I love you. I love you. I mean it. Till next week, it's me, Mo, wishing you peace and love. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Moe, and this is the Paisley Penny Arcade. And if you've never been here before, welcome. And if you've been here before, welcome, welcome. Come on in, have a seat. There are beanbag chairs everywhere. There are big, fluffy, puffy chairs everywhere. There are leather recliners everywhere. They're pleather. Please don't get bent out of shape there. There are all sorts of... Do get bent out of shape if that's what suits you. Some people like being bent out of shape a little bit. There are chairs of every kind. There's all sorts of things going on here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. There's Paisleys everywhere. They're floating around. Grab one. Put it in your hand. Let it rotate a little bit. Look at it. Changes colors before your very eyes. That's the nature of the place. It changes as you sit. It's filled with grit and wit and a little bit of spunk, you know, energy, grit, whatever. Grits. I like grits. Used to eat grits in the South. I'm not sure I've had grits since. My goodness, it's been a long time since I've had grits. You can buy it in the store, you know. I guess that's me talking to me. Hello. First of all, First of all, today is Wednesday, the 15th of January, 2025. And, it's my kid brother's birthday. Happy birthday to my kid brother. He's a delightful human being, and I love him very much. He's a great guy. He is that. And to all my friends, and to all my listeners, and you're my friends, and I love you very much. And to all of you in California, please, sorry for what's going on.